This is tape number 5, file number 5, cycle 2. Today's date is October 20th, 2015. I am interviewing Elise Harney Sr. and her daughter, as I know her, little Elise. And we're talking about the White Hart and John Harney and all sorts of things that go on in their life, past, present, and future. This is Jean McMillan, and here we go.
Should I have a look at what I said before?
No, I've got all the right answers.
You do?
I have all the right answers. And we'll start with, what is your name?
Elise Harney, and we have been residents of Salisbury since the 1960s, somewhere in there.
What is your birth date?
Ooh, 3/12/31.
Where were you born?
North Bergen, New Jersey.
And your parents' names?
Elizabeth Warmoth, Dublin, and my husband Jacob. My father Jacob Dublin.
Did you, or do you have siblings?
I have a none living, unfortunately, but I had an older brother Paul and a sister Gertrude.
And I'm going to turn to little Elise.
Okay.
All right. And your name is?
Elise Harney Morris.
And your birthday?
May 27, 1965.
Your birthplace?
Sharon, Connecticut. Our wonderful hospital.
And your parents' names?
John and Elise Harney.
And do you have siblings?
I have 4 wonderful, torturous brothers. Yes. John Harney Jr., Michael Harney, Keith Harney, and then my younger brother, Paul. One of your favorites.
Oh, yes. And he's promised to give me an interview.
Has he now?
I called him unexpectedly, and I said, Paul, this is your 4th grade school teacher, and I want an oral history interview. And it was dead silence. Miss Porter? Yes. Oh, for you? Absolutely.
That's so funny.
Couldn't have been better. Mrs. Harney, what was your educational background?
Oh, let's see. I went to Holy Angels Academy in Fort Lee, New Jersey, which was an all-girls school. And then I went to St. Joseph's College for Women in Brooklyn, New York. I started some graduate work at Columbia, but then interrupted it with marriage.
How did you meet your husband?
Did I tell you that whole story?
Yes, you did.
Oh, dear.
You can do me the short version if you wish.
My husband was living with his uncle in Manchester, Vermont. His uncle had the Wilburton Inn. When I was at Holy Angels, my very good friend there, Mary Summers, I was visiting her up at their summer place in Vermont, in Dorset, Vermont. And her father thought we should be anticipating the needs of our college years and finding ourselves a summer job. So he got the information about the Wilburton Inn, and the requirements were that we were supposed to send in a letter of application with a picture. And it just so happened that my husband was the one who picked up the mail for the inn and sorted it. Opened it and sorted it, so I passed muster on the picture.
Absolutely.
And so that summer was the beginning, right?
Wonderful. Miss Elise, your educational background.
I went to Salisbury Central, and I graduated and went to Berkshire School. And actually, I did 1 year at Housatonic. I forgot. 9th grade, I was at Housatonic Valley Regional High School. And then the next 3 years at Berkshire. And then went to the hotel school at Cornell University.
Good school. Good school. Is that how you met your husband?
No, it's not. We met out in Jackson Hole. But he's a Cornell grad. And
okay.
Michael's a Cornell grad. And Daddy's a Cornell grad.
Cornell is a good school.
And my 2 nephews are Cornell.
Yes.
John Jr.'s.
Bertram Michael's son Bertram, and then John Jr.'s son Beckett is in his third year at Cornell.
Beckett is third year?
Can you imagine that?
I remember Beckett. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I met him when he was a junior in high school.
Well.
Okay. Now we're going to talk about the White Hart. You bought it in 1960 from whom?
Well, it was owned by the Norton family. That would be Jim Norton, who is still living in the area. His mother and father were there. And we actually were minor partners in it with Reese Harris and Donald Warner. And
you were the working partners.
We were the operating. We were the operating partners, right? Mm-hmm.
You did the work. They got the glory.
Exactly. They got the table they wanted in the dining room.
What specifically, how did you work the assignments? What did your husband do for the White Hart? What did you do for the White Hart?
All right. Well, John was the general manager, and I was in charge of the dining room and the maids, the chambermaids, and then when we opened the country store,
And Daddy ran the room, you know, the,
oh, Daddy,
all the operation,
Daddy,
the chefs, and dealing with the bar and the bartenders, and
and honestly, he I don't think people work like that anymore, but he was definitely there 7 days a week, three meals a day.
Yes.
We never went on vacation.
You couldn't.
Never. You
never,
couldn't.
We never went on.
We never.
No.
There was no Disney World ever.
No.
Oh, you poor.
Thank God. I'm very happy that I never did that. But no Disney.
But what you were doing was so central to the town that they would have left a hole if you'd gone on vacation.
Well, it was terrible. John was always whistling and singing, you know, when he was walking around the inn. And when he was gone, I remember it was so quiet. You know, I used to miss him terribly if he was gone for a day or two. So his personality was right there.
But you employed, I mean, at some point, everyone
There's
worked.
So many people in town, you know, that worked for us when we were just talking with the new owners of the White Hart, and I know life changes and the economy changes, but we had a lot of mothers who were able to work for us. They would maybe work just the dinner meal, you know. They would be home with their children during the day. They were able to work the dinner meal. I guess husbands would come in. But they were able to work one or two meals. Maybe they didn't work all week, you know.
But you made it a possibility for them to have flex time.
Exactly, yes. No,
it
was wonderful.
You ran it as a family.
We ran it as a family, and the same with the youngsters, you know. They Mrs. DeMarkin, this is, I just have, I'll never forget this. Mrs. DeMarkin, who was a very formidable woman, and she approached John at Mass at St. Mary's and said, "John, it's time for Kiki to have a job."
And she expected.
Kiki was she was fabulous.
She was fabulous, and John said, "Yes, ma'am."
yep, that's the way it goes. At the maximum, how much wait staff did you have in the dining room?
Oh, we, and again, this conversation was so pertinent because this time of the year we would do, we did up to 300 dinners on a Saturday night. And I had a good core staff of waitresses. And then I would, you know, we would bring in as many young people. I can't remember exactly how many.
But you would need a
We did, yes, because, well, with all the children, Salisbury School Parents Weekend. The boys were here waiting on table. Berkshire School, you know, our kids were waiting on table. And
for our friends.
For your friends, I know. But that was part of it. So and actually, you know, we had a lot of fun. So
you couldn't be in that kind of a business unless you enjoyed it.
Exactly. And when my daughter...
And it's good training for the younger ones.
Yes, it is.
My daughter said she was going into food and beverage, and I said, oh my God, Lise, do you know what you're doing? You know?
But she did.
I did, and I loved it. And I love it that that my mom and dad's love of it, and then my husband and my love of it. Mm-hmm. What did my daughter... She just graduated from Elon, and she is at Auberge Collection in Napa Valley being activities manager for this fabulous resort. So
wonderful.
Three, you know, just a generation.
But you know what you're getting into.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like a pig in a poke. You know what you're getting into because you've seen it. And you've seen both sides.
Both sides.
You know, you've seen people in action and you've seen what's going on in the kitchen or the pantry or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's important because you need both. You need both.
Absolutely.
Did you have, other than yourself as being hostess, did you have someone that was hired as hostess?
Oh, sure. My goodness. Jane Fitting. The one that does all the shows up, or used to do all the shows up at Noble Horizon. She's another, and yes, we did. And one of the things too, we had some older women. Pat Pullman was fabulous. She was absolutely fabulous.
We had a nice group of older people
and younger.
And then you had like all the Rices. The Rices, all the Shanleys.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Oh, my God, poor Trish, right.
Well, Colleen Shanley. I mean, she, you know, but all those names, they all, the Lloyds, they
the
all.
Palmers. We have all of the Palmers. Mm-hmm. Who's the town clerk over in Falls Village.
Yeah.
Oh, that Palmer. Okay.
That whole family. Yep, we had the whole Palmer family. Yes.
Well, my husband's daughter, Anne McMillan, worked as a waitress.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Of course, right.
You know, that gets my family in there, too. Mm-hmm. Chambermaids, how many of those did you have, roughly?
Oh, roughly, we probably had about 6 chambermaids, but Frances Lotta is still alive. She's still living over in the housing.
By the ski jumps.
Yeah.
And she could do more beds, she could do more rooms than any of the others.
Any of the others. And along with that, she had Paul taking his nap on one of the beds. She had to keep track of, because that was it was the year before they started the daycare.
Okay.
Because they were talking about the daycare, and I was so happy, you know, that it was going to happen.
Sure.
And I said, this year, and then next year. And I remember Francis still had to watch Paul when he would be taking his nap.
That must have been the only time he was quiet. Well, don't tell him I said that.
The boys had a good time at the end, right?
Yes, they did. How many rooms were you renting at that time?
We had 23 in the main building. And then 7 in the motel.
And then you had...
And then we had the annex. Which was another...
The Gideon
house.
House.
Mm-hmm. Is it 4?
I think it was 4 upstairs and maybe 2 or 3 down. Well, it could have been 8, total 8 rooms, but I think... Yeah, it was probably 4 and 4.
Okay. Country store. Did you have a manager of the country store?
Well, yep. I was the manager of the country store. And the country store was an interesting story. Reese and John bought it from the Dunphy family from the World's Fair in New York.
New York.
And they bought it lock, stock, and barrel. So we showed you the picture of John with the Indian.
Did the Indian come too?
Oh, the Indian came, and Lester Horsford is the one who has the Indian, if you happen to want to know where the Indian is.
Oh, good.
But, they decorated the room.
The whole above, like the ceiling.
Pots and pans hanging, and the soap balls.
Oh, I remember those.
And in fact, the bins that we had, Elaine LaRoche had bought them she bought them from a woman. There was a woman in New York State who had bought them, you know, where we had all the soap balls.
Yep.
I think that Pete Hathaway has them in the little...
In his bread store?
In his bread store.
Ah. Mm-hmm. Oh, I remember the country store.
Yeah.
Oh,
and the penny candy.
And the
penny
smell.
The smell.
Was, that was distinctive, and it was such a homey, warm...
And there was always something for everyone to buy, whether it was the one-cent candy, the sheep...
The sheepskin coats.
Sheepskin coats and slippers and sweaters.
Oh, yeah.
And then, of course, baked goods.
You know, that was where the tea company started.
That's where the tea company started.
Yep. So we used to grind our own coffee. I could still smell the coffee before the beginning of the meal. You know, that was so good. That made such a nice smell. You know, we would grind the coffee for the meal coming up. So that was where Stanley Mason got the idea, you know, that we should also be doing tea.
But all the baked goods that, you know,
Fred Smith was our baker, right? Mm-hmm. And,
Anna Dama bread.
Anna Dama baked the bread, right. and... I can't remember the name of the baker, though, that did all the fancy cakes.
He went up to Great Barrington.
He was fabulous. We would have the buffets, you know.
Oh, yes, I remember those.
New Year's Eve buffet.
Yeah.
And I think his first name maybe was Rolf.
It was.
Not Rolf Schenkel.
No, not Rolf Schenkel. Rolf would do the German night with John, which was... an epic
next
event.
Week I'm doing him.
Are you?
I'm taking him next week.
Oh, yes. Good. And now, is Barbara still with us?
I don't know. I've just dealt with Renee and Rolf.
Yeah, so
as far
I
as doing an oral. Mm-hmm.
But so the baked goods were wonderful, and
the whole thing was wonderful.
Yeah, it was. It was. And, you know, I don't know that you could even have a store like that now. I don't know if, you know, regulations. I don't know. I really don't.
Well, the White Hart is talking about doing something to that extent. I don't, you know, a smaller version.
Yeah.
They should.
Well, we kept it open at night, and, of course, that was wonderful.
Oh, yes.
Because...
people have a little wine they want to buy.
Exactly, and also it gave people something to do.
And
if
the pocketbook would open.
Absolutely, yes, versus in the morning.
If
yes.
they were waiting for a table or something,
oh, sure.
you know, they'd have something to do. Yep. It was.
It was a very good marketing tool, it truly was, for a lot of reasons.
Uh-huh.
Who ran the front desk?
Olive Du Bois. Oh,
yes.
My God.
My godmother.
Oh, she was. She was. I don't know, it's hard to describe Olive. She was. She was everything.
she actually ran Dad.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Oh, she.
Someone had to be in charge of Dad, and she was the hammer.
Yeah.
Well, she'd do it too.
She would. She was. She was there before we came to the inn. So basically, she knew the whole scoop. And then, of course, Jim Norton stayed on.
Yeah.
Because he hadn't finished high school. And he was going to high school. He was living at the inn, going to high school, and then also working with us, and then went on to Cornell.
Mm-hmm.
So we had quite several people who had been in the previous operation.
That you just kept.
And you know, Francis, the chambermaid, they had been there. So, you know, we went into it with some degree of confidence because you had people like that.
You had a background and network.
And Olive was a straight arrow. Oh my gosh, you know, you didn't deviate from what was the right thing to do. She used to tell us this story about the owner during the war.
With my brothers, like, because they would do the night shift, and they were, you know, supposed to be doing all the accounting and all that stuff. And Michael and John, didn't they fall asleep? Came in the early morning and caught them sleeping, and they got into so much.
Oh,
what is going on here?
I know. Yeah.
They jump up. They got the bat in one hand because they're like, we've got money. What if somebody comes?
Sure. Uh-huh. Oh, I remember Olive for the Gingerbread Village.
Oh, the Gingerbread Village was famous. Because Yankee Magazine came and did a...
She was on the cover.
What was Woman's Day she was on the cover
of,
right?
Yankee did a insert, but Woman's Day she was on the cover.
You brought it in with the scrapbook.
Yep, I have it all. Yeah.
She used to make it fresh every year.
Oh, yes.
And then she would leave the gingerbread for the birds.
I think it would come to Salisbury Central first, and then come to you.
Yes.
I think.
Oh, she used to. She was very, very dedicated and, you know, did it for the children because Jimmy, her husband, was the custodian.
Oh, I know. I worked with him.
At the Central School.
Yeah,
so, you know, that was the other reason.
And it would, you know, it was a special treat at Christmas, and we would schedule when we would bring our class down to look at it, and every year she had something new.
Yes.
Every year she had something new, and she would shop all year for the little miniatures.
Exactly.
And the mirror lake with the snowflakes and the skaters.
And the ski jump.
Occasionally somebody in the bathtub.
Occasionally. But, you know, and the kids would look at it, and they'd point out to one, oh, that wasn't there last year, and they'd get so excited.
Yeah.
You know, and it was a real Christmas treat.
No, it was a Norman Rockwell
type of thing
that she created in our town, but really people came from all over to see it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. That was wonderful. I remember you had Danny Lee as a chef.
Danny Lee, if I told you, I should tell you how we acquired Danny because...
it's the American dream.
John dealt with an employment agency in New York City. So, you know, he would send out for a handyman for whatever he needed.
Line cook.
And the employment agency, I remember, they used to send in three at a time. You know, so for instance, when Eddie Green came to us, they had sent three people, and Eddie was the only one who stayed. But then the man called, the owner called John and said, John, he said, you've got to talk to this Chinese chef. They've just sold a business in New York. He's available. Oh, I know, because we had the French chef, and we didn't have any backup. We didn't have a second to give the chef a day off, you know, and have someone good in there cooking. So I actually had prayed to St. Jude for several years, because chefs are an ongoing, awful problem, you know. And Daddy actually could go in if the chef took it in his head, you know, to...
Walk out.
Daddy said to him, out.
Yeah.
He could do it. He could put the meals out. So he was amazing. But anyway, Danny came, and so he was just acting as a proper second chef, the French chef, and then, so there were French items, French-American menu, and Danny adapted himself to that. And it was Bill Kinesny who...
From
Canaan. Right. Who told us that we had someone absolutely extraordinary and we should let him try. So then on the night, on that day off, when he was in charge of the dining room or the kitchen, we tried the Chinese menu. You know, one side would be the French-American, one side would be the Chinese. Well, it was such a hit.
Oh, yeah.
And it was so good
that
it ended up, you know, eventually the French chef left and Danny was the top guy. He was unbelievable.
It was marvelous.
Unbelievable.
Nobody can, I mean, that lobster with the snow peas. I mean, to get fresh snow peas and real lobster versus imitation crab.
Yeah. Oh,
he was the best.
Oh, no, it was
food,
wonderful.
And if he said his food was hot, if it was Kung Po chicken, it was hot.
It was. But he had a nice mix of middle, and then the real hot.
That's right. But it was the funniest thing, because people would come in, they'd order shrimp cocktail, lobster with snow peas, and a white heart nut ball, you know?
A little of everything.
Oh, yeah. Now, speaking of the white heart nut balls, we get to Bobby Day.
Oh, we get to Bobby Day.
Tell about Bobby Day.
Well, Bobby, I think that Bobby was here and helped us with the name of the woman. Which I've already forgotten again, but you have her name.
Yeah.
Yes, she called John and asked if she could speak with him because she felt there were young men at the Southbury Training School who were capable of holding down jobs with some supervision. And what that would accomplish, it would take them off the support by the state of Connecticut. It would put them someplace where they might have more of a feeling of responsibility, accomplishing something, be in a nice community, you know, be out of an institutional
setting.
So Bobby came, and Bobby has been part of the family, you know, right from the beginning.
Longer than I've been born. I mean, yeah. He's
he was here before the...
You were a latecomer.
And Bobby has an extraordinary mind, actually. The stuttering problem, I think if Bobby were born today, that probably he'd be leading a normal life.
He's so brilliant. You want him for Jeopardy or Pictionary.
Actually, all the owners of the White Hart, starting with us and then after us, Bobby was the one that knew where everything was. He knew
up
where
to
all
today's present day owners. They ask him
all the switches that, you know, if the electricity goes off or the furnace goes off or, you know, whatever happens, Bobby has a memory.
And his job when you guys had it was he did the mail twice a day.
Well, actually, he did the mail twice a day, but he was working. He was working in the kitchen,
in the pantry.
And no, he wasn't yet in the pantry. He was doing. He was in the kitchen somewhere. But we did have a man by the name of Knight.
Yep.
K-N-I-G-H-T. Yep. And he was the pantry man. And he, for whatever reason, Daddy was returning chairs or something to the St. Mary's Church, you know, that we had borrowed for a party, and he dropped dead right out under the altar of St. Mary's. And so Daddy came back to the White Hart, and of course he had to tell everyone, you know, what had happened. And then he said, so, what follows Knight?
Day.
Bobby, you're the new pantry man.
That's so cute.
That's such a good... And he had a special birthday party.
Oh, they had a big birthday party for him over at the White Hart. His 60th birthday.
And who really helped do so much of that was Joni Ford.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who else helped, but it was so nice, and
the whole town turned out.
And the White Hart hosted it, and he got the famous shopping cart.
Yes, yes.
And a lounge chair.
Ooh, I didn't know about that.
Now he's got a new lounge chair.
And now he's got a new,
the old one
was worn out.
I saw him going to the library shortly after we'd had our talk session, and I told him how much I appreciated the fact that he was able to participate, and he was so pleased.
Yeah,
he gets that smile.
He got that beautiful smile.
Yes.
And I wanted to make a point to him that I appreciated the fact that he was participating, because that makes it so much more interesting to have everybody participate.
Absolutely. And Bobby was definitely a big, big part of our family. He stayed on the first time around when the White Hart was closed for that long period of time. He stayed on at the White Hart. And you know, sort of acted as caretaker.
Didn't you tell me that he shoveled?
Oh, he does. He shoveled. Well, he and Scotty Allen was another one from the Southbury Training School. And
I think we told you about him. He went to the Riverton Inn and then gave the big donation to
the town of Salisbury for all the rowboats, because what he would do on his day off was go down and fish.
And eat sun, bring all the sunfish back.
He'd eat a whole cookie tray of fish.
Okay. Now, if I remember correctly, Bobby's specialty was salads and the nutballs.
The nutballs, right.
Okay.
And the famous story was Bobby and Michael being closed in the freezer preparing, you know, 300 nutballs for a special party. Daddy just put them in there.
Oh, my. Describe the nutball specifically.
And vanilla ice cream rolled in nuts with hot fudge sauce.
Rolled in walnuts.
Rolled
yeah.
in walnuts oh, with hot right. fudge sauce.
Or butternut, right? With a little whipped cream.
Well, yeah,
and a cherry on top.
And a cherry.
Oh, you gotta have a cherry.
Gotta have a cherry on top.
When you sold the Weinhardt in 83, whom did you sell it to?
Let's see. I'm assuming I can fill in here and give you a name. That was the people from California who ran into trouble. They ran into legal problems. So we did.
You had to take it back, didn't you?
We had to take it back, yeah. And then when it was closed for the long period of time, it went to auction. And at the auction, that I remember clear as a bell, it was right on the front porch of the Weinhardt Inn, and Juliette Moore and a group of investors were bidding, and Jay Metz was bidding. And it went up in increments of $5,000.
Juliette Moore and Terry Moore
yep.
were married, and they have the old mill, and
yeah.
Juliette works for us now.
Yeah, I know both of them in various capacities.
Yeah. So they had a pause in the auctioning, mm-hmm. and Juliette got her group together. Anyway, Juliette did prevail at the auction.
Okay.
And her group. So what I need to do is just get you the names of the two people. There were two people in between.
Well, undoubtedly I'll be calling for information on spelling and things like that. Because I won't be able to get everything right the first time through. Is there anything else that you want to talk about the Weinhardt before we go on to your husband's many firsts?
Well, it should talk about the connection with Salisbury Winter Sports.
That I have... under John Harney's firsts.
Oh, okay.
All right?
Good.
What I have for that section is the Christmas tree, the snowball, the German night,
yep.
his buffets, the Peter Duchin dinner,
yes.
the fashion shows, and then anything else we could think
of. Oh, right. I do have one bit of information for you on the Peter Duchin dinner. That was the Taft family. I remember I said I couldn't remember the name of the family mm-hmm. that had that. That was the Taft family.
Okay. Let's go back and talk about the Christmas tree.
Oh, Lordy, the Christmas tree. Well, there was this big, beautiful Christmas tree in the middle of the
green
lawn. And actually, if I remember correctly, it was on Weinhardt property because the town owns the very end of the peninsula. Well, I think Annie Harris was dating one of the Rockefellers, and that, of course, put the idea of the Christmas tree that they light down at Rockefeller Center in my husband's head. And God forbid any tree down at Rockefeller Center should be more beautiful than a tree we would have in Salisbury. So he, at that stage in his life, the first 2 or 3 years, shimmied up the tree and put the lights on himself. He was in good shape.
When was that? Would that have been in the early 60s?
That would have been in the 60s, probably. Yeah.
Annie Harris, there's a little Annie Harris, there's a time issue there.
Well, there was a connection between the Rockefellers
yeah.
and the Christmas tree somewhere in there.
Because I didn't come to town until 67, and I always remember the Christmas tree being
lit. Was there. Well, then it was lit, because then, so maybe it was, you know, within 2 years of our being there, something like that.
Okay.
And then he finally realized that... you know, someone might be able to do a better job. So that was when they started getting the lift in, you know, to do the trees. But it was beautiful.
Always.
Tree. And then, of course, we had the band, the Salisbury Band, came and sang Christmas carols, and we had candles.
Yep.
And then we would give everybody hot chocolate and cookies.
Well, it was a very strong community-based.
Oh, yes.
Always.
Always. Mm-hmm. Always. Mm-hmm. I mean, the White Hart was the center of town.
Yeah.
I know. Daddy did everything. Did I talk about sheep shearing? He did sheep shearing on the front lawn of the White Hart. That was an event because Aunt Susan had this friend who had a farm in Litchfield with sheep. And we were selling her wool in the country store. So then Daddy got the idea of the sheep shearing on the front lawn.
So they had like a little, they made a cage and
yeah.
the sheep were all there. And then they all of a sudden the sheep were naked. And
poor things.
Yeah, it was just, it was really funny.
Oh yeah, it would be. Snowball with Swanson.
So, Snowball, right. That was Salisbury Winter Sports, and we were just trying to really make the ski jump a weekend event, and so we got the idea of having a snowball. And
that you could wear jeans to.
Well, yeah. It,
you didn't have to be in a ball gown.
You didn't have to be in a ball gown. It was a snowball. But I think I came up with the name of the girl who was the first queen. Wasn't she
I think you
Martha
said that.
Minor's daughter. I think it was Martha Minor's daughter was the first snow queen.
Okay.
And Olive. Oh, my God, Olive. Olive would sit there at the bar. She was the cash register. And so she would sit there right at the bar, you know, and she sat through the whole thing. She would be, you know, they'd be pouring drinks out as fast as they could, and Olive took the money. She was right there. But, you know, the admission was all a donation to Salisbury Winter Sports. And then we used to have I know I talked about when the kids would come home from the various events.
Yeah.
And they always, you know, would go through the Sunday night buffet line because they were coming back on a Sunday. And, of course, we're hungry, so everybody would go through the
But with Daddy
line.
With this, the snowball, I mean, he was one of the announcers at
ski
jumps. And he must have done such a fabulous job. They asked him to do the 70s, the
oh,
80
we were
Olympics.
Up at Lake Placid, yeah.
1980 Olympics and to be an announcer.
Oh, wonderful.
So, poor mother, she was a marker on the hill.
I was outside
in the
cold, and Daddy was in the tower
with all the lovely, beautiful
Isn't
international
that
women telling
Isn't that
him,
typical?
Telling him how to pronounce all the names of the ski jumpers. You know?
The wife out in the snow and then go with the gorgeous women. Typical. But such fun.
Oh, it was.
Such fun.
No, Salisbury, Victor Clark was, you know, Victor Clark, George Kiefer.
Audrey Whitbeck.
And Bam. And Phelps, Peggy Phelps, I ran into one of the Phelps boys the other day. Dick was the father. Jim Phelps. No, Jim.
John.
Maybe.
John Phelps?
John.
Or maybe that's a son. But there's
one of the sons, yeah.
Okay.
And he's in town.
Yeah, he's on my list.
Oh, good,
well,
yeah.
I've got a list. I've still got probably 30 people to interview. Because it, you know, people say, oh, well, you know, you haven't done so-and-so. And I keep adding him to my list.
Yeah.
I want to get Lorraine Stevens because she was one of your waitresses.
She was one of our waitresses.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
German night, when did that start?
Well, you know, it was in that wonderful phase in there when we had Danny Lee. So we had a good chef. We had the baker who was doing all these beautiful cakes. And this is Bill Kinesny again, because he was a good friend of Rolf Schenkel.
Yeah.
Rolf can probably give you the dates. But he, you know, that was the first thing was Rolf would do some of his specialty German schnitzel.
Yes. Oh, yes.
And roisty potatoes. Oh, my God. John loved the roisty potatoes. And then we had German music, you know, for singing and beer. And it was more fun. It really was.
And then from that, then Reese Harris decides that the uniform should become like those German...
Oh, the dirndls.
Yes.
Oh, which we got from Lime Rock. From that man in Lime Rock that had, I think, where the lawyer is now. That beautiful old Victorian building.
Yes, the painted lady. Yep.
And...
we got the uniforms from him.
We got the uniforms.
They were a real,
German dirndls. Yes. Right.
Kiki Warwick.
They're cute.
Yeah, they're cute. But country inn in Connecticut. We're in a little German in here.
Yeah, well, that's all right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, everyone loved it.
Oh, sure, because it was different.
Yeah. And well, they were perky and cute.
When I was doing Gudrun Dunst, she had an authentic dirndl, and she gave it to the owners of the Hopkins Inn.
Did she? Because they're friends.
Yes. And
they're all they're friends of Rolf.
Sure. Oh, they're all, you know. And she said they were so pleased to have this as a, you know, as a pattern and for other things. But it makes it so much better to have it the authentic rather than something that's been, you know, stuck together. Mm-hmm. But. When I asked Mr. Schenkel about what he did, he talked about his roles and he talked about some of the other things that he did. And I said, what was your favorite day of the week? My day off.
Rolf was a hard worker. He really
was. Oh, yes.
Was.
Oh, yes. When did you do the Sunday buffets? When did that start?
Well, let's see. If we really tried to figure out, you were at Berkshire School?
You started them way before that.
I started way before that.
Because you did Sunday morning buffet, you did a Sunday morning buffet, and then you did a Sunday night buffet.
But not a brunch.
We didn't do a brunch.
No, brunchy things weren't in there.
It was right after church.
Right after church. We'd do it like 8 to 11, 8 to 12, maybe even. I don't know. It was a big...
But it
was a big buffet.
Oh, yeah. I can remember the Rotary Club used to have...
Yes.
And then we would do a buffet for the Rotary Club. Yep. The Bridgers came on Tuesdays. We always had them.
Now, the Bridge Rotary players. Club came for the buffet around 81, 82, because that's when Foster and I got married, and he was teased by the Rotary because he was marrying somebody so much younger.
Oh.
And he remembered that, so that was at the buffet at Rotary.
Yeah.
And they were wonderful. There was the carvery with the roast beef and the ham and the turkey
and
all these wonderful salads. And such a good variety.
It was. Well, Danny was amazing. You know, Danny was doing all that.
And you'd have a whole separate table just of desserts. Like there
was I remember that.
You know, with all different tiers.
And it was beautiful.
Yes.
You know, it wasn't food. It was beautiful food. Mm-hmm. Beautifully displayed. And, you know, when you're making something that you want to be a
It was a good combination. It really was. The Sunday buffets went on for
years.
It's actually what we've suggested for the White Hart, you know, that was such a positive.
It's just I don't know how people feel about buffets now.
Back when I was waitressing, we used to work them, and I liked working the buffet, which it was easier for me to work a buffet than it was to work five or six tables.
Yeah.
Because I didn't have a bus person. I was doing everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from taking the order straight through to the check. The only thing I couldn't do was I couldn't serve drinks because I was under 21, and I was in Massachusetts. So I had to have somebody serve the drinks for me, but I was doing everything else. No, I know that routine. Oh, the feet. Tell me about the Peter Duchin party.
Well, that was the... go ahead. That was the completion of the new addition on the inn, and that was our first party there. So it was the first wedding party, and as I said, it was for the Taft family, and I think They had, I know they had, I believe the family owned a house on Old C&E Road. It was a, it's a very contemporary house. It's still there.
Yeah.
And it was designed by some architects from Yale University. So the Tafts were here, and this was a family wedding. Peter Duchin was there with his band, and there were two grand pianos angled side to side. And when the rest of the band would take their break, Peter Duchin would sit there playing two pianos.
Oh, my word.
It was absolutely amazing. And it was one of the first weddings that was a not a formal sit-down dinner wedding. It was one of the heavy hors d'oeuvres, small table, casual seating weddings. And it was a huge success. It was really great. That room was a great party room.
Oh, it was.
Yeah, it was Absolutely. A great party room. Because we had the old barn board mm-hmm. on the walls then, mm-hmm. and it acted as an acoustical buffer.
Sure.
So the room, although it was a big, big room, you know, it wasn't too loud.
And it wasn't echoey.
It wasn't echoey. Yeah. And then we also had the spillover space going out to the patio. So it really, you could accommodate a lot of people, and they had a lot of flexibility.
And it wasn't packed tight.
And we were not packed, no. It was a lovely wedding, it really was.
Where did you have the fashion shows?
The fashion shows were in the big dining room as well, and when they did the seven motel rooms, in the middle room, there was a door connecting to the dining room, so that the models could use that room, you know, as their changing room. And as a matter of fact, there are two people in town. Well, Marguerite Giordano was one of our famous models, because she was actually a model. And then Modor, Mary Kirby and Ed Kirby's daughter, lives in Sharon. And she had the Connecticut Yankee for a while and was involved in the fashion shows.
You had a story, a wonderful story, about your husband's generosity to a woman who was trying to get her husband to the hospital and her car broke down.
Her car broke down. Daddy gave her the car, gave her his car, to continue down to the hospital, got her car fixed, and just had it for her when she came back. But he just said, take my car. And, you know, she couldn't believe it, but
he was that kind.
Oh, he wouldn't think a thing of
no,
not
wouldn't.
Doing that, you know? Well, when the other times, when he really was wonderful, and the inn was wonderful. I remember we had this, the blizzard of, where would it have been, in the 70s maybe? Elise can tell, because she can tell you how old she was. And the roads were closed.
68.
The roads were totally closed. And John stayed down at the inn, and they were open all night for the road workers and the utility people, you know, who were out there. They were serving them food, hot food, you know, all during the night. And that went on. I think Daddy was away from home for almost a week. At least, when did we have that big, big snowstorm, you know, when
the roads were closed for a week.
The roads were closed.
And I said it was 68.
I think that could be.
Well, I would have been 3. Yes, because the boys all talk about when they jumped off the roof and
stuff.
Yeah,
what they used to do is jump. They were jumping off the roofs of our house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that was, I don't think Paul and I, well, Paul was just born, and I think I was 3, so they were probably throwing me off the roof.
I hope not. But yeah. I think it was 68. I got stuck in that one, so I remember that one. Now I'd like to go on to the ambulance.
Well, that's what I was just going to say. So actually, along with that, you know, caring about the community and taking care of people, Reese Harris and John started the ambulance service, and
Reese bought the building.
Dr. Rayalt, who was a surgeon down at Sharon Hospital, he was absolutely fantastic. You know, that was, and Rosemary Fidelli. Mm-hmm. There's someone you should interview. Is Rosemary?
I have.
Have you?
She couldn't do what she can't
talk.
But what she did was a memoir.
Oh, did she?
Oh, I get them one way or the other.
Oh, good.
Yep, and she was delighted to do it too.
No, Rosemary was wonderful because she was one of the original founders, and Ted Davis at Hotchkiss School.
Sorry, I just have to. This person's taking my mark.
Okay. But yes, because the White Hart was acting as Olive on the switchboard, on the plug-in switchboard. We were.
She was the dispatcher.
We were the dispatcher. We were the ones that were here for the, you know, emergency medical, fire, burglary, you name it. You know, it all came in. And did you? Were you able to interview the telephone operator who died, you know, a few years ago? Izzy? Wasn't it Izzy?
Izzy Decker?
Izzy Decker.
We have one on her. I didn't do it, but we have one on her. I'm pretty
because
sure.
Izzy Decker was the telephone operator. And I remember, I know when my mother died, before the ambulance started, and I got on the phone, and I said, Izzy, I got to have Dr. Smith. And she said, oh my gosh, I know he just went to the train station to pick up his daughter.
Yeah, well, that again, that small town, and the operator would know whatever was going on.
But, you know, the White Hart was just amazing. So the transition then from the White Hart to the ambulance was really wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
It was wonderful, but a lot of the early meetings would have been at the White Hart.
Mm-hmm.
And then Reese Harris was asked by Governor Maskell to write the regulations for the state of Connecticut for the ambulance service. And Reese and Ginny Harris for a whole year traveled all over the state interviewing other, you know, sometimes it would only be fire departments that had the ambulance service, but Reese actually wrote the regulations for the state of Connecticut.
And I imagine they've gotten tighter and tighter and more complicated over the
well,
years.
That we've had to fight for them, right?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I have done a few on the ambulance squad, and I was amazed at the amount of training and work that these people put in.
Oh, they do.
And it's all
in
your own
time. Do you have to go potty? Huh? Come on. No? Okay. Yeah. I know. The requirement is amazing. Okay. Come on. So, you know, important integral part of the community.
Oh yes,
it was. It had a lot of things that it contributed.
Oh sure,
mm-hmm.
And it still does.
Yes,
and it still does. The board honored your husband.
Yes,
tell about that.
Well, the latest new. It's the utility vehicle, I think, for the ambulance. You know, which allows them to go up the mountain, to do mountain rescues, all sorts of things. And John got the worst driver's award. But anyway, they gave it, yeah.
And Miss Elise is now on the board.
Miss Elise is now on the board.
I know. I've done my first year on the board for the ambulance. And so I just sent my first letters of asking, you know, for people to support. And it's such an important, I remember when Carolyn Birchfield asked me to join. Daddy was so, I'm so glad that he was, knew about it.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. it was such an honor.
It's a family tradition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I had said when I did Jackie Rice, I didn't know anything about the ambulance. I've never had to call the ambulance service. I didn't know what it was.
Thank goodness.
Oh, yeah, I've been fortunate. And she took me through and showed me all the equipment and talked about the training and this, that, and the other thing. I said, the next time I get a letter, close your ears, Miss Elise. Yeah. I will increase my donation if I can.
Uh-huh.
Because I have no idea. If you don't use the service, you don't know. Now, there was a wonderful article in the journal last week about the visiting nurses as well as the Volunteer Ambulance Society. And it's so important, but you don't realize it until
you need it.
Until you call 911.
But, you know, on our end, on the real estate side, that's like something that people want to know. It's a huge asset to say we have not just a volunteer ambulance, but an extraordinary volunteer
and
ambulance.
All of the other services that we have in town.
Yeah.
It's
remarkable.
You've got all sorts of things.
So we switch too much tea in this family.
Yeah, I can understand that.
But, yes, that's...
Well, then we'll skip over that one and we'll talk about real estate. Talk about the real estate business. How did that evolve?
Well, my mother... her mother actually always told her that when they had the White Hart, that she should be selling real estate instead of like it just seems like a very natural outlet for her. And so her mother always told her that she should be selling real estate, and she didn't listen. And it wasn't until that the inn was sold that then Mom decided, you know what, I'm going to finally listen to my mother and get my real estate license. So she got her license and immediately started working for DeVoe Real Estate, and they were based out of Sharon, Connecticut. And at the time, it was the most incredible powerhouse of agents. And they were all new agents. Carolyn Clem, David Bain, Mary Kirby.
Okay.
I was saying, when you first started selling real estate, your mother's the one who told you to do it. And that who else? Carolyn Clem, David Bain, Mary Kirby, you, Barbara Roth.
Barbara Roth here. Down in Sharon.
Yeah.
Was Carolyn Clem, David Bain.
Yeah. Who else, though?
Marty Cavallaro, Mary Kirby, myself.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and all of them who are actually all still doing real estate and doing very well.
A lot
well.
Of them have their own companies. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, you said that you bought this house in 85.
Mm-hmm. I got married in 87.
Okay, alrighty. And your business has grown over the years tremendously.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Because Gail Zabriskie was the first person in my, came into the office with me, and then Barbara Roth.
And at the time. So you got your license, and then 2 years later, went right for your broker's license.
Went for our broker's license, and because when we bought the house, you know, of course, the house had been the old bookstore.
Oh, yes.
Murray's Ferrusky's bookstore.
Yep.
And then his wife was bedridden in the house for 8 years. They retained the commercial zone on it by having, and I think it was one of the Palmers, did a antique shop in the front. I think it was one of the Palmers kept it going, but the house was a disaster. So at that point, the White Hart was on the market again, so that was in the 80s.
Yeah.
And I had just gotten my real estate license, so this house came on the market, was listed for sale,
and you paid full price.
I showed it to someone who was looking at the White Heart, and, you know, there was round-the-clock nursing service. All they did was smoke. You know, the house reeked of cigarette smoke. Yeah. It was terrible. And the people that I took through it, to show it to them, because my husband always felt it should be part of the inn, because this has 2 acres. The inn doesn't have much of anything. And the woman, I'll never forget, she said, "Oh, get me out of here. Get me out of here," you know.
But you paid
and
full price.
I went home, and I said to John, "Oh, why can't we buy that house, you know?" And it was so funny because I was new, and, you know, I had just gotten my real estate license, so I was fairly new at the game. And I tried getting my own listing on the house because I knew it. And no, I, for whatever reason, Petey Robinson, I think, had the listing on the house. I couldn't get the listing. And I ended up paying full price for it, right.
And it was worth every penny.
Worth every penny of it, right.
Now, you went out for a tea break. I'm going to go back. You ran for select person.
Yes, Charlotte Reed. It was her third term. And I ran against Charlotte, and it was a wonderful experience. It was one of the best things I ever did in my life.
Why?
Because it forced me to debate Charlotte Reed in the town hall of Salisbury, which no one in their right mind would ever think that I would dare to do.
And why not?
My mother is one of the most read persons. People I know, and she is brilliant.
Well, I remember Paul, well, Elise on one of her, you were here from college, right?
Wasn't yes, that when we I was all had to
and
work.
So and so one of her boyfriends was with her, and they had to get out here on the main street, you know, and hand out brochures, you know, vote for my mother.
Oh, sure. Well, if you've got 4 kids, you're 5 kids, you might as well make it work.
Harney and Kiefer led them an ear.
It was a great team. It was Harney and Kiefer, right?
Right.
And then when I was doing the debate down the town hall, I know I said Paul was up at Salisbury School, and I said, "Paul, you know, you really don't have to come. You know, you know." He said, "No, I'll be there, Mom."
Yeah. Well, again, family support. Family support. Mm-hmm. You were voted in for, what, 2 years?
Well, I had been on the board, right. I had been a select person. I had been on the board of selectmen, right. But I did not, I was never first selectman.
Now, Sarum T. Tell me about Sarum T.
Well, that was at the White Hart, and Stanley Mason, was aware of John, what John was doing, and he just approached him and said, you know, "Don't you think it would be wonderful to also be able to serve your customers a good cup of tea?" And Stanley, of course, you know, was living in Salisbury. Salisbury, Connecticut was the home. Salisbury, England was the home of his birth. Salisbury, oh, yeah. Connecticut was the home of his choice. And imported excellent teas, loose teas. So he got Daddy started on the loose teas. And, of course, this was done in the same partnership with Reese Harris and, I'm sure, Donald. I don't know if Donald was involved.
I don't think Donald was involved. It was just Reese and Ginny.
Reese and Ginny, and there was one other person involved in it. But, you know, it was the beginning, and when we sold the White Hart, then, of course, you know, we'd had to be distributed.
Yeah.
So Reese and Ginny kept the Sarum Tea, and we went on and started Harney and Sons.
But I think one of the most amazing things of that whole thing is just how Mom was saying, how we do the coffee beans.
Yeah.
Dad just always would look at what's going on in the kitchen and what can you use. And we used to do the fresh squeezed orange juice. And from the fresh squeezed orange juices, we had all this orange rinds. And so after baking them off and heating them, then he's like, We make hot cinnamon spice tea, which is the number one selling flavored tea to this day for Harney and Sons.
It's their top tea.
And it all started because of fresh orange juice at the White Hart.
Good girl.
Well done. That's a nice plug. I like
Good
that.
Good girl.
Well, it's just, you know, as a kid, you'd watch how Dad saw, and he hated waste.
Yeah.
And Dad could make a meal, like, he to the last days of his life, he could make a meal that there was always, every guest was welcome, no matter what friends, everybody.
Yeah. I mean, we're going to eat in this Thanksgiving, I'll tell you.
he could take a dinner that truly was going to serve 10 people, and yet he could slice it so you felt like everybody felt like they got the whole thing. And he could do it, and that's just who he, I mean, there was never
you never
so
felt
welcoming.
Unwelcome, right?
You never so welcome.
That was one of the things that I remember about the inn, and I didn't come that often, but it was always a very friendly, warm welcoming
greeting. You were
that is so important, and it's a very hard thing to duplicate.
It's a hard thing to teach.
It's a hard
thing to duplicate.
You can't.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she has it. Her daughter has it.
But it's something that is inherited. I'm afraid it's like teaching. Teaching is a gift.
Yeah.
You have to be able to have that gift. Book learning is not enough.
That's
no,
right.
You have to have that gift.
No, you've got to have that contagion, you know, that you share.
Yep. You have to have people skills and the desire to make people feel welcome
happy.
And happy. Mm-hmm. And that's what always was projected when you were running the White
Horse. I remember my first job offer that I had when I was still in college. And so I had no experience except for the inn.
Sure.
I mean, I did everything at the inn.
Yeah.
But I had no experience except that I knew how to write a resume.
Yeah.
And because I put that my parents owned this family inn and that I worked my way up, I remember getting this first big job at Rock Resorts in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. And when I asked why he gave me the general manager's job for a 5-star restaurant in Jackson Hole, why did you give that to me? He goes, because I knew you could walk into a restaurant and you would notice that all the salt shakers are filled and pepper or they need it, and sugar's on the table.
Yep.
Like, that you would see that the water glass is like, you just knew it without even knowing you had it in you.
Yeah, you didn't have to be told.
Yeah.
You just
honestly, and you know, that's something you don't shut off. I still can get very uncomfortable
me
in a
too.
Restaurant. If I see
no
that
one
I know somebody
it.
is not doing something they should, you know, that something is not being done that should be done, I just have to make myself sit there. But it makes me feel uncomfortable.
Oh, I waitressed professionally, quote unquote, for about 8 years, and I was someplace recently, and this was a very good waitress because my friend didn't eat as quickly as I did.
Yes,
and she waited.
Yes.
And after we got ready and was ready to leave, and I saw the waitress, and she was an older woman, and I said, you're a real pro. And she looked at me, and she says, how could you tell? And I said, because you waited until my friend had finished.
Yes.
And how many restaurants do you go to?
As soon as you finish?
They grab the plate.
Yes.
And that's not the way it should be. Yeah. They should come back and check with the water. They should come back and check, how was your meal? Is there anything I can get for you? They don't always do that.
Mm-hmm.
They don't always do that.
Mom did nice trainings there. You were very...
Yeah. Well, I was trained back with the summer hotels where people would come and stay for the summer.
Yeah. And so you knew your people.
You knew your people. You knew what they liked.
How are we doing time-wise?
We can end it right here.
Oh, well, I do have a 4:30 in Sharon. Yeah. So.
Okay. Thank you so much. If we want to do episode 2, we can do episode 2 at another time.
All right.
That's perfect.
Thank you, Ms. Melise. I appreciate it.
We certainly appreciate it.
And I will find out for you the names of the people who were the owners, because I can do that. Jim Norton is doing work for us over at the tea company. So,
Clarence,
wonderful.
You're not eating yet.
Thank you.
I'll give you a